This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of August 10th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday evening, a nice warm Sunday evening, is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm being humidified.
Well, that's good. It clears, you know, keeps those pores open, gets them open, clears out all the toxins.
Are you okay? I don't know if you're referring to me as something toxic, but I'll assume not.
We all have toxins in our systems, and it's one of the anti-aging. Things that you can do to help out that process, if we
have an anti-aging component here and we record this podcast faster than the speed of light, are we going to get younger?
I will.
Good. Good. Okay, go for it.
I don't know about you, bud.
Let's check in on our space time, you know.
You're on your own. All right. Frontline and essential workers worldwide, thank you very much. Testing goes up. Numbers go up. They've stayed up recently in Tokyo. We're learning how to deal with it. But mask up, folks. Mask
indeed.
Up. And
especially those people around me.
You hear that, everyone around Jim?
The wife excluded. All right. We're good.
All right. And, geez, I haven't seen you in ages. I don't know if we're ever going to hook up again this year.
No, it's scary.
I know. But I'll make sure to mask up if we get the opportunity. All right. On this week's show, we've got a telephone chat with old friend Dennis Sarfati, NPB's all-time import saves leader. And we're going to discuss the Hawks and the Ramikon milestone and handle some other situations and some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, our good friend Dennis Sarfati, among imports, he leads the way in MPB history with 243
saves.
That's good for fifth all time. I think Jim is still trying to arrange a chat. And things just actually didn't go well for us this past week. And I knew I could count on Dennis to talk to us. I actually had been keeping in touch with him, asking him how his situation was going. We always actually keep in touch, so that wasn't a difficult thing. But as the prospects for another interview seemed to fade away, I just said, you know what, I'm going to shoot him a message. And it just happened that on Thursday morning, I sent him a message and he said, hey, look, I know that there's a story out about me. And I'm like, huh? You know, I hadn't seen the story. And I'm going to be heading back to the States on Friday, tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. So I said, well, do you have time to get a chat in before you leave? And he said, yeah, we can do it today. I said, you tell me the time. He said 4:00. So 4:00 on Thursday, I gave him a call. But then on Saturday morning, I woke up, though, and I saw a post he put up on Facebook that had a lot of goodbye, and it was good, and it has been a great career, and the torn labrum injury that he has been dealing with has not ever healed, according to him. You'll hear in the interview. And so he posted about retirement. Now I tweeted it out, and I even though it was 6 a.m. and I had just gotten up, I really wanted to be careful because he never really actually said I'm retiring in his post. So I said, Dennis posts about retirement, and
in the neighborhood of retirement.
Right. And he's a very popular guy, and I don't know, some of you guys might remember, I think it was a couple of years ago, I tweeted out something about, maybe it was 3 years ago, Takuya Asawa of the Dragons, the former MVP, or the one-time MVP and setup man, who threw so many innings that, you know, he was basically, threw his shoulder out and was useless after that. And Dennis made a comment about it, and the comment on Twitter blew up and got so many retweets and replays and comments that came back to it. And then it was a similar situation as soon as it was 6 in the morning here. But as soon as I sent out this tweet about Dennis, started to get so many responses and reactions. And again, yeah, I didn't say that he retired. He didn't say he retired, but he made it clear that he thinks that his career is done. But you'll hear it in the interview, so he'll be able to tell you. You can hear. I don't have to translate or interpret anything here for you. He'll come right out and tell you what's going on. But he's a really positive guy. I mean, you talk to him, there's a lot of positives. Now, not everyone is perfect, so it's not everything is positive. But even the negative things, he turns into positives generally. So, you know, he's very bright about the future, very positive and forward-looking about it. Let's see. I looked up his last outing in a regular season game, and that was April 15th, 2018 against the Lotte Marines in Fukuoka, and he allowed one run in one inning. And I don't know when he suffered that torn labrum injury, but I assume it was around the 2017 Japan series, and he pitched a bunch, including three innings in the clincher, I think it was, Fukuoka. So since then, he has really been fighting to get back on the mound and contribute to the club. And he's contributed to us a lot, though.
Yeah.
JBW, he helped us get the Carter Stewart interview earlier this year. He was going to be in the panel discussion, but as you'll hear in the chat, he had to go back to the States to tend to his family and his wife, who has an illness. So anyway, he's got a lot going on, but he can handle it. And he talks about everything from his career to COVID-19 to Carter Stewart Jr. to a lot of things. So let's have a listen to Dennis Sarfate. All right. Joining us from Fukuoka, I assume, is Dennis Sarfate for the, I don't know, 100th time or so on the show. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
You got it, John. Thank you for having me.
All right. So this, as we were talking here before we started recording, this has been a really trying and crazy time. What has it been like for you?
Hard. I had to go home for my wife's health in April, and then coming back was a challenge. But you know, without family here, it's really hard. I'm sure a lot of guys are feeling it. I know I talked to Herman and Chiba, and you know, he hasn't seen his wife and kids since January. So a lot of people are struggling player wise, you know, with not having their families here. And the everyday life, just going to the field, all the checks, and you know, now with the Hawks getting the scare with Hase the other day, and just having to go through all that again, it's like you can't leave your apartment. You're stuck. I was in my apartment for 3 days, couldn't leave. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I feel like this year's never going to end. but you know, it's you know, there's baseball being played, and you know, even in the States, there's baseball being played, and that's always nice. I remember after 9/11, you know, stuff kind of, everyone kind of crowded around the Yankees and the Mets, and you know, then the, you know, the playoffs came, and it was just a magical time, drew everyone together. I think that was the only year that everybody wanted the Yankees to win the World Series.
Don't say everybody.
you know, it's just one of those things where people, it's just getting people's mind off it by having baseball. Do I think it's smart? I mean, if you're putting guys out there at risk, I mean, these guys are going out at night to dinners and stuff like that. They're coming together. But, you know, athletes are going to handle it better. You know, they're starting to let fans in more. Is that going to put people at risk? Everything's always about risk. Who's going to get it? Who's not? So, but just on the day-to-day, just to sit back and be like, okay, God's good. We still get to breathe. You can go to the beach. You can go outside and sit in the sun. This will pass. It's only a short time. You know, it feels like it's been forever, but it's only been a few months, and I'm sure it might be a few more months or a year, but it's going to pass.
Right. So now I understand you're headed back to the States tomorrow on a flight, because you have re-injured an old injury. So what happened and what's the prognosis?
Really, to be honest, I never even got over the last surgery. I mean, I've tried everything. I've had 11 injections over the last 2 years to try to prolong it and help it out. You know, after my first surgery, the doctor Philippon, who's, you know, world renowned, one of the best, actually is the one that created the tools to do the hip repair, labrum surgery. He just said, hey, listen, you don't got much time left. You got no cartilage in there. You're going to be bone on bone soon. It could be 10 years. It could be 2 months. We don't know. It just looks like it came a lot faster than we were thinking. I felt really good in spring. I felt like I was just coming back. I just needed to build my strength. Then the shutdown happened. It was okay. I was still, I wasn't getting treatment anymore because the trainers weren't allowed to come.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly things started to come back. When I went home for my wife, I ended up going back to my training facility and getting my therapy going again the whole time I was home, and felt okay. Felt actually getting strong again. And then I came back and threw a couple bullpens, and the last one I threw, it felt like it did when I first got hurt. Mm-hmm. And got an MRI, and it's just a really bad hip. I mean, I joke with people, but I got a hip of like a 70-year-old man. I have bone on bone. There's no cushion in there, so it's a lot of grinding on it.
Right.
Weight on my weight-bearing leg. I think if it was my landing leg,
sure,
I could deal with it probably a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's a push-off leg, it's so hard to use it and push off. A lot of times my leg will give out because it's like a nerve reaction where your mind's telling your body, no, stop.
Right.
And that wasn't funny. I'd be in mid-pitch and then have to almost fall over. So we just figured, let's get this checked. The MRI showed that I needed the hip replacement. And this is the first time, actually, that a Japanese doctor has told me the diagnosis that's the same as the States, like where they said, hey, listen, usually they're like, oh, it's okay, you can do this, maybe get an injection. They talked to me right away. They said, you need a hip replacement. There's nothing else you can do. And that was a hard moment for me because, there hasn't been any sports player in any major sport of contact sport or football, hockey, soccer, basketball that have done a hip replacement and played again. So I'm not saying that's what this is going to end up being, but more than likely, I probably pitched in my last game, this past spring training. I just don't see, there's too many complications with it. You could rupture your fibula. You can crack it in half because they're sticking a metal spike in there with a ball on top. You can dislocate it out so it'll pop out of that socket.
No, stop. You're making me hurt just thinking about it. So you've evaluated.
They were trying to talk me into you could be the first baseball player. And the more research I did, and then once – so these two doctors here have trained under my doctor in Vail, Colorado, Dr. Philippon.
Gotcha.
Once they conferred with him, sent him the results, I talked to Dr. Philippon, and he said, listen, you can't get this and then play again. He's like, you're putting your normal day life in jeopardy. As it is already, I'm going to be crippled the rest of my life. I mean, there's no going back once you do this hip replacement. Right. There'll be things that I can't do anymore. Things that I can do probably better after. I mean, I can't even put my shoe on sometimes. I have to wear slip-ons because I just can't bend down to tie it.
Right.
Putting on my socks is hard. So I tried everything I could over the last, 2.5 years, literally everything, drilling bone marrow out of my spine, all the stuff that I could do, I did it, and nothing just seemed to help it.
So you've obviously evaluated your career and everything. Have you come to a decision, or are you going to go back home and check first?
I'm going to go home. There's a little bit of a wait to do the surgery. The thing about the surgery is an hour long. Most times, the latest it can go is an hour and a half. You walk out of there when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2 weeks, you don't even realize what happened. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to lift and train and then see if that takes me to wanting to be the first one or not wanting me to be the first one. And I talk to my wife and just see, is it worth, what could, because, then if you fracture your fibula, then you're talking about a metal rod in your leg. And that just doesn't seem like, as you get older, when I have this surgery, I'm going to need another one in 15 to 20 years. And if I live longer than that, I'll need another one in another 15 or 20 years.
Mm.
So it's just, I'm disabled for the rest of my life, but you know, I haven't thought too much about it. The team's been very, very good to me about just take your time, go home, you know, think about it with your wife, have the surgery, and then start training and get strong and see where we go from there.
All right. Well, let's get off of that topic and talk about the team a little bit. Now, Jim and I always discuss the huge talent pool that SoftBank has. Now, how do you see this being a benefit? Because you still got a guy like Seiichi Uchikawa on the farm. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I talked to him yesterday, actually. I texted him. You know, he's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. He's hitting, I think, 500.
Yep.
Or close to it.
I heard about that, yep.
And there's got to be a spot for him. I mean, you got one hit by Wakui last night. You lost a tight game the night before that. There's just got to be a spot. I mean, you put Uchi, and the guy's got 2,000 hits. The biggest hit I've ever seen was against Yamazaki in the Japan series in the ninth inning. Mm-hmm. Tie that game up in game six. Like, the guy's a winner. He's been a hitter his entire life. The guy knows how to hit. I just feel like you can get something out of him. I don't think he's done by any means. You know, he works hard. He's in good shape. So I hope to see him up there soon, to see him playing again. I know he's probably frustrated, as anyone else would be, when you got some guys hitting in the 100s up there or low 200s. You know, some of these young guys that come up there that are doing well, you know, it's good. It's good to see Kurihara, you know, hitting the ball pretty well. And a lot of these other pitchers, you know, Nao is Higashihama, is, you know, Ishikawa.
Yep.
But what really impresses me is Wada. I mean, Wada-san is just, he makes it look easy. I know he didn't get the win last night, and it wasn't great, but he pitched solid into the fifth inning.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, it was a fun game to watch.
For sure. You know, those first five innings were pretty fun until they scored some runs. But, you know, he goes out there every time and he just executes pitching. He makes it look really easy for someone that's my age. And it was just fun to watch him and Wakui go at it last night, two old guys dominating each other's teams.
Yeah, it was a fun watch. Now, quickly, you guys had the COVID-19 scare with Yuya Hasegawa, you mentioned before, testing positive. Now, what were your concerns and how much contact did you have with him?
I wasn't concerned at all. I've never been afraid of this virus. I figured I'm in good enough shape where if I got it, I would just deal with it and, you know, get through it. If that's what the Lord wanted, I don't know what would have happened. But, you know, I saw Hase a lot. He was rehabbing. I was in the weight room. Never close contact. Hase's a closed off guy, so you don't really you're not going to get too much out of him anyway.
Okay,
but you know, I say hi to him from across the weight room and talk crap to him, and you know, be watching the game on TV, and he would say something, but never close enough. And to be honest, my last 3 weeks in Chicago have been very. I go straight to the weight room. I lift. I leave. It's just been a little depressing, a little bit of a hard 3 weeks to go through.
Sure.
So I hadn't been around a ton of guys, so I knew I probably didn't have it. Obviously, I didn't. I had negative tests. They did the contact tracing, and I passed that. And so, it's just kind of a crazy, crazy thing when you can see some guys are scared, some guys weren't. You know, Vandy was a little scared, and Moore's kind of in the middle. He doesn't really care. He does, but he's got a pregnant wife at home. He's got a baby already. You know, Luke's, I think, almost 16 months.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely some concerns for those guys. Vanny's got a little one at home. So, but me getting it, I'm by myself here. I don't got my family here. I guess I can sit in my apartment for 2 weeks and do nothing. I already did it once.
Yeah, if you've gone through it once, then that that can do it. So the Hawks, you know, we always pick them to win the league, and things are looking strong for the team now, although it hasn't gone on one of those big, long winning streaks. But you're going to go back home and ponder everything. But how do you see this team as it has been so far this season? It's kind of been kind of spotty.
Yeah, they got Graciel and Despaigne coming back soon, which I think will give them a lift. You'd hope. They haven't played much in the last few months. But if Gita and Akira get hurt, or they can't play, or they start cooling off, I mean, you got some big holes I think they should be worried about. Defensively, I think they're okay. I think they're starting pitching. Once they Matt back and Rick back, I think they get better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little worried about the bullpen. a lot of inexperience. That used to be the strongest. I used to say that was probably the strongest point of the Hawks was the bullpen.
Sure, yeah.
Besides Maury and Moianello, there's a lot of, and you know, Kayama, there's a lot of question marks. Guys who have been given a chance to pitch in a big game haven't had success, and some guys, you know, have a good game, then they have a bad game. There hasn't been a whole lot of consistency. Definitely not used to that here in this team. So I worry about Maury. I worry about Moianello as them leaning on them too much. I mean, Maury's pitched a lot of games. He's got 50-plus games in the last 7 years or 6 years with the team. So, you know, longevity, right? You can't keep pitching 60 games a year with the playoffs. That it just wears on you. I mean, I went 5 years in a row of almost 70 games plus with the playoffs, and it didn't do too good for me, I guess, with the surgery. But, yeah, I just worry about their bullpen holding up through the course of this whole season with so many less off days. I think that's a concern.
And what about Carter Stewart Jr.? Have you seen him?
Seen him. I've been working a lot with him, talking to him a lot, trying to just feed him. It's tough. He's, you know, he's 20 years old. I remember when I was 20, I didn't really listen to a lot of older guys, but he tries. I don't know, you know, I told him the other day, I said, look, you want to get done with this season? You want to go home and you want to think, did I get better this year? And if you say no, then this year was a waste. And I said, so I don't want you to go home and say that. So let's do some things so you can get better. I had some recommendations to the team. You know, they're always asking for my input.
Sure.
And I thought they should take him off Nigun, put him in Sangun, and let him just throw fastballs. One game, just start against a Sangun, an industrial team, whatever, and only throw fastballs. He's got too many cooks in the kitchen for pitches. The other day I watched him pitch. He threw six pitches in the game. He doesn't commit any of them. And so I asked him about that. I said, why don't we just get rid of three of them, okay, and let's focus on the other three and make them better. And then you can start adding pitches in later on.
Sure.
And so I think he started to understand it a little bit, you know, what I was getting at. It's hard to go out there with six pitches and not all of them work. I mean, you almost trick yourself and you don't even know what to throw anymore.
Yeah.
So, he's a power pitcher, and I want him to act like it, and I want his presence to be like that on the mound. And the games I've seen, he's been kind of like just fiddling in there, throwing sinkers, curveballs, and just trying to revamp him and kind of find his identity, what he really wants to be. Because if he wants to be that guy, like a Brandon Webb type guy with the D-backs back in the day,
mm-hmm.
That's fine. You can be that guy. But you're 6'5", pretty strong kid, and you're over the top with a good curveball, let's just start commanding your fastball. And with two pitches, you can pitch in the game.
Gotcha.
You know, so he's raw. It's going to take some time. I mean, they got him for 7 years. So hopefully he develops quick and they can use him the last few 4 or 5 years of his contract. But he definitely got some work to do.
And I know you got some work to do to get home and get healthy. So we'll be praying for you. We really appreciate the time, and take care of yourself and have a good, safe trip.
All right. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right. As he posted, I think basically he told us he's retiring, but it's unofficial. And even the team issued a statement saying he has not retired yet. The doctor is going to look at him and check him out, and nothing has been decided. So,
but having heard the interview, you know that you can see both sides of that story. The team doctors were trying to get him to say, you know, they says, let's see, you don't look like a guinea pig, but you kind of do look like a guinea pig.
Well, we can make you into one.
we have an artificial guinea pig surgery.
All right. So I know I was squirming in my seat as he was talking about this injury and describing the condition that's going on. But what was the biggest thing that stood out for you?
Well, as I said, you know, we were chatting the other day, and I was going through the same thing because I had a broken hip.
You and I were chatting.
In 2017, correct. And, you know, when he said things like, I can't tie my shoes, I can't, putting on my socks are hard. And I said, well, I can definitely relate to that. And I was also thinking, I'm sorry for the extraneous stuff, but I was also thinking about getting my doctor suggested a hip replacement surgery last year. But then when I looked into the complications, I'm going, it said, you should get one if you have pain walking. I said, I do, but only when I'm too fat. So I think rather than a hip replacement, I've got a better solution. Anyway, the complications are, you know, it's like, don't walk upstairs like more than once a day. I'm saying, you know, it's like 3 months, you know, it's like 3 or 4 months you're disabled. And I'm going, I don't know, I can manage that. Of course, that was before working from home COVID-19. So maybe now is a different time. But anyway, so I listened to that and you said your teeth were grinding. My teeth were really grinding. My hip was grinding. And I certainly can sympathize with the things that he's talking about. I was thinking, I can't run now. And I'm thinking, well, the doctor's saying, well, you could play again. People play with, you know, people play sports with artificial knees, but knees and hips are different. So what did I take out of it? I think the biggest thing was Dennis's hasn't changed any since we first encountered him. I'd say I really encountered him. I wrote a blog about Dennis Sarfati in Japan on jbalallen.com about some experiences. And he hasn't changed a lot. He's very straightforward. He's very, he's opinionated, but he's honest about it. And I disagree with him on a lot of things, you know, but I respect his opinion. And he's all about other people. You know, he's all about the people he can help make better. And you hear that, it comes through when he's talking about Carter Stewart. And I thought it wasn't the first time that I heard him say, the team asked me, what do you think about this? What do you think about that?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a small thing. But it's a small thing, you know, for an individual, but it's a huge thing in Japan where import players are generally, you know, even managers. I mean, there are managers the teams don't ask them what they should do.
Yes, there are. And have been,
I mean,
yes.
Terry Collins and
Marty Brown.
Marty Brown are perfect examples of that. It's like, you do your job, you know, we want you to come here and change the culture, but don't change anything.
Yeah, I always like to say, if we want your opinion, we'll beat it into you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, talking about, I thought the expressions about Carter Stewart, I mean, he is one extreme, you know, and I'm not certain that his answer is, Dennis's answer is the best, but it's certainly one possible way. And I'm also, it tells you a little about the Hawks and the former CEO, I'll call him, of the Nippon Ham Fighters, and I had this discussion. I'll boil it down briefly, but he said the difference between us and them is they have a really great organization, the Hawks do, but they also are not, they're entirely old fashioned in the sense that they're manager run. If the manager changes, like it happened in 2015 when Kimiyasu Kudo came in, their whole training changes or doesn't. Everything's dependent on what the manager thinks. If the manager's interested in sports science, everyone's going to train. If he's not interested in sports science, maybe they'll throw the weight room in the garbage. but that's the way the Hawks work. And the Fighters are a very sort of a centralized clearinghouse of information. Shohei Ohtani shows up. Here's your training program. This is what we expect from you. This is our organizational viewpoint of where we want you to be. There's discussion, but this is the plan. Bam. You get a team plan. Bam. The Hawks are, as he said, too many cooks. The Hawks have been that way. They're this high tech, you know, telecommunications parent company, but the team is still in many ways run like an old Japanese team with a bunch of a lot of overlapping responsibility. And let me say this, I have a really good relationship and I have a lot of respect for the people in the Hawks organization.
Okay.
But from top down, it needs more, you know, it needs a little, the people are great, but the overall plan could probably be reconsidered. And that gotcha. That came out, you know, what should we do with Carter Stewart? I mean, I'll be honest, I love Dennis Sarfathian. I'm glad they asked him, but it's kind of a weird sign that they are asking him and they've got so many people telling Carter Stewart what he should be.
I suppose so. I mean, we don't really know.
No, but, you know, we don't know. And I think, but if they ask him in, at the front end, you know, when they have a meeting, you know, let's get ideas for how we should proceed with a pitcher and a player. And they ask him at that point for his input. That makes sense. But if they're asking him for his input after they've already, you know, it's like they're asking him how to make the cake after it's already in the oven.
Oh, to me, I would think the reverse, that if they're asking, well, I mean, if they're asking him at the beginning, it does make sense. Mm-hmm. But if they're asking him at this point, then there's something on their path or in their plan or in their scheme has not worked out.
I'd say there isn't a scheme.
So now they're going to.
I suspect there isn't really a scheme.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know. That's true. That's just my impression.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I know we don't get a lot of information from injured players all the time. I think it was Dennis who gave us information about his injuries previously. So this is a rare opportunity when we get to talk to players who aren't actually contributing because of being away from the team like this. So I hope the listeners appreciated that. And again, we were just lucky to get him when we got him. Otherwise, he would have been in the States. We probably still could have talked to him, but I thought the timing was fortunate and the way things worked out. You know, I'm not in agreement, as you stated earlier, I'm not in agreement with all of Dennis's attitudes and opinions, and he is very opinionated. And I probably don't feel like the COVID situation when he said, well, you know, if I get it, that's fine. And I'll just stay home. And I thought, yeah, that's fine for you. I mean, it probably would work out for you. You are in shape. But there's just the thing about this thing is there aren't that many guarantees and blah, blah, blah. I just didn't agree with it so much. Yeah. But I totally understand he's alone. He's not going to spread it. And that's what my biggest concern is. It's not so much what happens to the person who gets it, who's not worried about getting it. It's the people who are worried about getting it and are vulnerable. Yeah. And who don't want to get it and have it get spread to them because people are not wearing masks. But I like what he said about talking to other foreigners in Japan, especially talking to Frank Herman of the Lotte Marines and telling us that Frank hasn't seen his family since January and how difficult that is. And it just shows me the network that goes on among the foreign community of players here. Mm-hmm. That's really nice to hear. And that they lean on each other and that they do have each other. And we didn't report that the charges had been dropped against Jay Jackson of the Lotte Marines. So I wanted to mention that and then say that I hope that people are out there giving him some advice or just talking to him or just being there for him. And I'm sure they are, including his teammates. So that, you know, when I heard him say that, I immediately thought of Jay Jackson, because not just because Frank and he are on the same team, but because of what he has gone through. But glad the charges were dropped against him. And, you know, maybe we can get in that thread of all the players talking amongst each other. Guys, let us in so we can get interviews.
Yeah. Well, we do hear. I mean, you hear, it's amazing that, you know, I often hear about, you know, what did you know about Japan before you came? And the connections, the threads are sometimes really interesting. I remember asking Scott Matheson about guys he played with, the Iron Pigs, the AAA team of the, I can't pronounce the place in Pennsylvania where they play. I don't want to butcher it, but it's like one of these teams that lots of guys came from that Phillies AAA team and ended up in Japan. And when he was there, there were like four guys who had been in Japan, And I asked him, and I said, you know, did you hear about Japan from Ryan Vogelsong? He says, nah, Ryan was kind of like, Ryan's kind of like Ryan. it was a little bit like, which I loved Dennis's comment about Yuya Hasegawa. You're not going to get a lot out of him.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. So, you know, you get these comments and you get guys like, I mean, you know, you just never expected it. Casey McGee talking about Nigel Morgan. And mm-hmm. he was saying, you know, if something happened to me, there's nobody in the world I would rather have look after my family than Nigel Morgan.
Wow.
Because he's just somebody I trust with my life. And I'm going, whoa. You know, it's these little snippets, these connections that people have are just so, they're kind of ethereal because we can't touch them, but we hear them and people say them and you go, wow.
I'm with you. All right, well, let's make a seamless transition and talk about the Hawks. So they played the series that we weren't sure was going to get started up in Sendai because of the COVID scare mm-hmm. with Hasegawa that we'll get to a little bit later. But they put the Slump Brothers, Nobuhiro Matsuda and Vladimir Coco Ballantyne up atop the lineup on Wednesday. And I thought, you know, Coco had been dropped to the number 8 hole for the first time since coming to Japan. I think that was in the previous series. And you got guys like Ryoya Kurihara and Akira Nakamura driving the heart of the lineup, guys mm-hmm. who are not necessarily power guys. Although Nakamura, he's got that power.
Yeah.
You know, he will take you out when you make mistakes. He will take you out to dinner. with all their problems, and it seems like, you know, Ballantyne's not hitting, they still don't have Alfredo Despaigne and Yurisbel Graciel, who are, what do you have to say about that, Jim?
Who are back with the team already.
Yeah, and getting ready to come up. So that's some help. But they've been playing a lot of guys. It seemed like, and not just because of injury this year. A lot of times we see them go through a whole slew of roster changes, but some of it's mostly injury-driven. Mm. And I don't think that's the case this year. It seems like they're resting guys. They're just trying something new. They're mixing guys up, guys who are like Ballantyne and Matsuda, who are not hitting. They're just sitting them down and giving guys different roles. Wow.
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't know what's going on. Now, last year, of course, it was mostly injury-driven because their outfield was decimated by injuries, and this year, less so. But we've seen, you know, a half dozen. It seems like Kimiyasu Kudo wants to be the next Tatsunori Hara and, you know, have a different second baseman every day of the week.
Yes.
The interesting thing there was, putting Matsuda and Ballantyne 1-2 doesn't have any, you know, I thought it was interesting, not for what it meant overall or what it meant for them, but for Kudo, it was huge because he's like the last holdout of, I want two fast guys at the top of the lineup, regardless of anything else. He's the guy, it's like, don't you hit too many home runs in that number 2 spot or I'll yank you. Yeah, you're out of here, you know. Don't think you're a power hitter, dudes. And I know that's not him, but he's still got that, he's got that prototype, you know. That's his standard lineup, is, you know, somebody like Kenji Akashi, although Kenta Imamiya has been his regular number 2 hitter most of the season and much of last season when he was healthy, and he's got some pop. So he's not prototypical in that respect, but yes, middle fast middle infielder is his typical number 2 guy. So Ballantyne is a break from that.
Yeah, and I think I said Wednesday. It was Thursday that they did that. And they actually won the game. Mm-hmm. They won 3-1, but it didn't seem to help those guys, although Matsuda did have a hit in 5 at-bats. I think Ballantyne walked, but
I'm not a batting coach, but I will say what I have observed, as opposed to actually knowing anything about it, was that I've seen Ballantyne, a lot of teams basically throwing everything on the outside edge to Ballantyne. I mean, and it's something inside now and then and something low now and then. But yeah, I would say more than half the pitches he sees are either on the edge or outside. And he's gotten really good. He's gotten really good at hitting pitches 2 or 3 inches out of the zone. I see.
Okay.
But I think that has been a negative. That has had a negative effect on it. It could be that that's had a negative effect on his approach. That he's basically looking for those pitches now, and things aren't going well. And that's the supposition. I don't have any clue what's up with Coco, but I did observe that all from the start of the season, almost every pitch that he saw was on the outside corner.
Yeah, well, I mean, all the troubles, ho-hum, they're still tied for first place. Obviously, in this league, they have a playoff series this year. It's going to be the first place team against the second place team. So nothing's guaranteed. You're not guaranteed to move through to the Japan series just by winning the league, like in the Central League. However, here they are right in the hunt, and they're up there, even with all the roster moves and slumps and pitchers who are coming into the season start. I mean, look at their rotation. I mean, Kodai Senga, because of injury, wasn't able to start the season on time, even though we had the long break. But he's coming back and working himself into shape. Tsuyoshi Wada pitched well the other day. You heard Dennis talk about the fact that the old guy was really doing well.
Yeah, he's pitched well 2 games in a row. Not as good as his previous start when he was missing bats, it was like, it's like a guy stepping out of the wheelchair, you know, and doing the tango in the middle. But he doesn't miss bats. He misses barrels. You know, this is a guy, but he had a little extra zip on it. He had an unusual amount of zip on his fastball, and people couldn't catch up. I mean, it's not it's a 88-mile-an-hour fastball. It's nothing special, but all his other pitches make it hard to get solid contact because he knows what he's doing. But he was missing bats, and that was pretty wild watching that. That was like sci-fi.
Yeah, and then now Higashihama, you know, they've got these guys that I call that the top of their rotation, and then they just got some other guys they seem to throw in.
Ishikawa's been really good.
Yeah, but then, and it was interesting to me that Dennis said he was worried about the bullpen, and I think we both last week rated the SoftBank bullpen as the top in NPB, especially when it comes to protecting leads. Mm. But you don't always get to that section or that part of the game. And it seems like they've really endorsed just, you know, taking pitchers out when they see a problem or there's a situation and a bad matchup. They go for the favorable matchup. I've been watching these MLB games where the pitchers have to face 3 batters. And when you do that in the morning and then in the evening you're watching MPB games where the pitcher only has to face 1 batter, you get confused. You keep thinking, oh, this pitcher doesn't have to face he doesn't have to face 3 batters. I can relax.
Wow. Okay.
No, I mean, I can go back to thinking about how baseball used to be in the good old days where pitchers, you know, were only sent out there. And we had it, I think it was in the Chunichi Yomiuri game today, in which they had announced the pinch hitter. Then the Dragons made a move to a pitcher, and so the Giants took the pinch hitter and pinch hit for the pinch hitter. And I'm like, well, you won't see that in the States now, because they're like, you know, well, announce a pinch hitter to get a guy, a different pitcher out there. But yeah, if this guy doesn't get the hit, the next guy will, because that's a better matchup for us or something like that. It's just going to be weird. So, yeah, I'm glad we don't have to put up with that stuff. But I'm thinking that the SoftBank Hawks are just kind of transitioning, without us really knowing about it, to a not a short starter situation or opener situation, but just transitioning to more bullpen innings.
Well, they had 2 bullpen games in this series.
Mm.
And that was weird. And I think
you're saying weird, and I'm saying I think that, you know, they're transit. And now, obviously, we haven't seen all the starters that maybe we expected to, but I think we're seeing a change in philosophy.
I think we are, and it's not just the Hawks. I mean, we saw a lot of it last year. I mean, I remember you know, we saw some sort of snickering at not novel managing this week, but the whole thing about I remember Japanese bullpen games were a rarity, you know, something a teams did maybe three or four times a year. And last year there was an explosion of them. And this week, I know the Giants had two. They had a bullpen game today. They had a bullpen game the other day. They had, and for the Central League teams, I know because four of the Central League teams have nine games in a row this week. So I understood that. But the Hawks had two bullpen games. There is a fair explosion of them. And why there is, I can't say. But well, it could be related to the COVID-19 that there's more than last year, or, you know, just like we're seeing more shifts than we saw last year. Not a lot more, but more.
Okay.
You know, and so a few more shifts and more times where you'll see the second baseman playing in shallow right field.
Yep. I've seen that. Deep second.
Deep second, you know, with the shortstop, you know, he's got maybe his left foot on the second base bag or something. So.
Yeah, I've seen that. So, but they're still stacked. And the one thing I've noticed, even with Kenta Imamiya not playing every day at short, is Ukyo Shuto, who's just basically been known as a jackrabbit. He's out there making plays, man. That dude can play short.
Yeah.
And he's got an arm. And if he really does hit at all for those guys, man, is he going to be good. So, and then you got Kenji Akashi, who's just a marvel. I mean, he comes out of nowhere, gets out of, you know, out of bed in the morning, cracking the ball. So, and, you know, just being productive for them. And he's playing some first base. I mean, this is I don't even know what they originally drafted him to play, because he's played all over the place.
Yeah. He's always been a bit of an oddity. I remember when in the Western League, he still got more triples than home runs. He's sort of a throwback. But I know in the Western League one year where the parks are very big, the Western League parks tend to be really large, and the run scored is low. But I think one year he might have had like 19 triples.
I remember you bringing him up on the show as this is what Jim likes to do. He likes to pick out these little guys who, you know, pretty much unknown, unproven guys who do
weird
something interesting or something intriguing on the farm, get brought up, and then here they are on the first team, but they're not standout players, but they keep, you know, they hang around. And this guy's been around since we've been doing the show.
Yeah,
for sure, because I'm usually bringing him up on the show.
Well, I mean, and you did that. I mean, you did that with Shuhei Fukuda, with Shuhei.
One dude.
Yeah, hold on a second. I said, don't interrupt me, John.
# high heat.
With tall Shuhei Fukuda, tall, skinny, tall, not as skinny, but I mean, you were, I had my image of him was from like 7 years ago when he was really skinny. And then you're going like, oh no, he could be a regular. I'm thinking that skinny dude. And then we had that conversation one day and I'm watching him play. I'm going, hold on a second. He stole somebody else's body. He's a bigger dude. And he was driving the ball. You think, you know, he's hitting, you know, 10 home runs in a year and as a part timer. And I'm going, what happened to the old guy? Who took him?
The
guy's
old guy.
Guys change. Well, now he's the old guy. But
yeah. And my other guy was Yuhei Matsuyama of the Carp. Those are the two guys I picked out who I thought could play.
Yuhei?
All right, well, let's yell at the coronavirus and make a four-seam transition. So as Dennis and I touched on in the interview, there was a Hawks player, second-team player. I mean, Yuya Hasegawa is probably a first-team talent, but he's down on the farm with Uchikawa, we've been talking about. But he tested positive for COVID-19 in the game against Cebu. That was last week, and the game was postponed, and seemed like the Sendai series was in jeopardy, but they tested everyone on the team, the results of which were not really officially released before the team said it was going to go ahead and play that series. That was kind of weird, but they went up and played the Eagles, and the Eagles got the best of the series. They won 4 out of 6. I actually expected to hear more positive or hear about more positive tests among the Hawks, but they said everybody cleared the tests. Except then we heard on Friday that Richard Sunagawa, the half Japanese, half, I think it's American player. Dennis Sarfate actually mentioned, I don't know, a couple years ago, said he was, you know, killing it in the gym. And he was reportedly diagnosed with corona, but they believe he wasn't in close contact with others. He's self-isolating. Then today we got the report of the umpire who was working on farm games who reportedly tested positive. So
yeah, we've seen a slew of, we've had two guys from the Hawks, two front office people from the Hawks, two front office guys from the Buffaloes. We had a trainer for the Hawks, a rehabilitation group.
Yikes.
And then people are isolating. So I heard, the one I heard about Richard Sinugawa was that he was isolating because they had determined that he and Hasegawa had been in close contact.
Okay.
I didn't hear that he had tested positive. But
I heard the report that he was diagnosed. But,
oh, okay.
But they actually believe he wasn't in close contact with others.
So. Maybe so these things are very – sometimes the Japanese throws me for a loop. Because I was just fluid.
Yeah.
Well, I was translating the umpire story today, and it was quite convoluted. It said that the umpire was informed that an acquaintance had been in close contact with someone who tested positive.
Right. So that he needed a test.
Well, and then he came down with symptoms, and so then he got tested. Okay. So they are. The message here is not that the teams are being bad, although individuals are still individuals, but that, you know, with a number of infections in Japan, even a very low number of infections in Japan compared to other countries, and you know who I'm talking about, that it's still
world leader.
It's still possible, even when you do the right things, even in Japan, where it's relatively safe to be infected without doing anything stupid.
Yes, it's just highly contagious. Mm-hmm. That's what they've told us. So, it just seems like it's unavoidable that everyone just has to do what they've been told. And a positive test. I wish they would test more. I actually wish they would test more. But when there's a positive test, just try to isolate everybody. But that's why we don't need these walk-off celebrations. And, you know, we see the guys, the players, not touching and not high-fiving on the field. But I just got to believe in the locker room, it's just different. And
you still see high-fives on the bench. You know, people think no one's looking.
But here's the thing. I haven't heard them talk about the details about staggered showering with the guys, or they don't let
in. And there was supposed to be no huddling before the games and before innings, and that didn't last long.
Yeah.
The engines are starting.
Engines are revving, yeah. So, be safe, everybody. Mm-hmm. We want to see the games and see the season played out.
So far, the surprise is that fans have been in the stands for over a month, for almost a month.
No, it
was the 10th of July. It was the 10th of July. So we're just at the one-month mark of fans in the stands, and we haven't heard about any fans becoming infected.
I still don't like it, especially in dome stadiums. It just doesn't make sense to me. But
okay,
all right. Making a two-seam transition, we want to address some of the criticism that Alex Ramirez has been getting because he hit a milestone as manager. He won his 300th game this past week, and only two other skippers in the history of that franchise. He's with the DeNA Bay Stars, but they were called the Yokohama Taiyo Whales back in the day. And before that, what were they? I don't remember.
Before that, they were they had a couple of other names, Taiyo and Yochiku, and they merged with a couple of teams down the road.
So, only two other managers in club history have had as many as 300 wins, and that's Hall of Fame manager, Osamu Ihara.
Yes.
And then franchise leader, I think, in wins, Kaoru Beto.
Who managed them forever.
And that's how he got his, Alex is in his fifth year,
yep,
and he's already at 300. Now he's got a long way
to go.
He's
also got the second best winning percentage in franchise history.
Yeah, well, we're talking, I mean, that's good.
Yes.
I'm not downplaying that at all. We are talking about a franchise that hasn't really won a lot. So,
well, they've done well at the end.
But I'm just saying, when you get a good manager, now he's got a long way to go to get to those guys above him. But, you know, he'll pile up hundreds of victories if the media and the fans leave him the hell alone.
Oh.
He knows what he's doing, for goodness sakes, is what my point is.
Well, let me tell you what happened to the guy who had the best winning percentage in franchise history. They fired him.
Yeah, thanks.
Because they decided that the team would be better off with somebody who would toe the cultural line a little better.
Yeah. He knows what he's doing. He has been the beneficiary of some talented players. But obviously, throughout our time talking to him as manager, and even before he became a manager, I figured he would be on the field managing teams because of the way we spoke about hitting and things. But it's obviously he puts a great deal of time into the handling of pitchers. Now, this is a guy who was an outfielder, right? Mm. Why is he spending so much time being involved with the pitching staff? It's because he has a plan. Remember, he's the only hitter and I've talked to a lot of hitters, and maybe they just don't want to give away the secrets, but he's the only hitter I ever talked to who said he tries to set up pitchers. So I think, you know, he's got a real good idea about the pitching and what the plan is for a season, generating lineups, choosing the pinch hitters. He's a very successful manager sending up pinch hitters. His pinch hitters have, in the time that he's been there, I would say have far outclassed the rest of MPB in terms of batting average and production. Runners, making moves within a game. So to the critics, just check out his winning percentage and his total and just leave him alone. Just, you know, whenever you want to open your mouth as a critic or tap those fingers or thumbs on your computers and smartphones, just go look at the winning percentage and where he has finished in the Central League standings since he has been in charge. And then just erase whatever you're typing because it doesn't make sense.
I agree for the most part, but to say he's had the benefit of really, really talented players,
I think he's
the team. He's done very well with a team with fairly modest talent. I mean, that having said that, he's had the pitching has been outstanding. The Bay Stars pitching historically has been very good because historically they play in a hitter's park, mm-hmm, and the pitchers tend to run up pretty good pretty healthy ERAs there. You know what I'm talking about? Because they play in a park that's conducive to a lot of run scoring. So they don't have a high tolerance for ordinary pitchers because the attitude is, his ERA ain't cutting it, so let's get better pitchers. So, but the Bay Stars have a real good pitching staff, and things like he's really good at sticking with guys who fail and not getting down on guys who fail. I mean, the whole bit with so that's one thing, and the other thing is I would say he's really good at evaluating talent. Because I think he's good in the way that some managers he's better than average at that. I'm not going to say he's Hiromitsu Ochoa, who was crackerjack, or Katsuya Nomura, who was really good, but he is good. I mean, he was the guy who was talking about Keita Sano for a while, and he's done basically nothing at the first team level. He's done very, very little at the first team level. And for him to say, and I'm not going to, you know, go full stats analysts and say, you know, Mr. Ramirez and I disagree about a lot of things, but he does see talent. You know, he sees things, and I really trust his talent judgment as more than. Probably, I think that's just a huge part of a manager's job that people don't see.
that too, and they've drafted well, especially with the pitching staff. Yes. Among starting pitchers, they have drafted well since he got
there. Yeah, I don't know if that's a thing that has anything, that's certainly a benefit to him. I don't think he has anything to do with the draft, because that's,
I'm not sure either, but he's very prominent at the draft with the picking of the envelope, and it just seems like there's a plan that he went to the team with a plan. Now
that could be
consult or how they go about it, we don't know, but it seems like he has a plan and he's part of the process.
Well, the Bay Stars are built essentially along the Nippon Ham Fighters model, is that the front office equips the managers with things to do. You know, they provide him with options. They provide him with logistical and analytical support. He doesn't have final say on trades. He doesn't have final say on player development. But if it is like the Fighters, then he does have input. But that's a very it's a nice division of labor. And I've talked to the Bay Stars analysts. I think they're very sharp, and Mr. Ramirez sees himself as being maybe more analytical, you know, with the data science than he really is. But he thinks about it a lot. I mean, he does, as you said, he works so hard on the details of the game. And I'll agree with you. I don't think there's any manager in Japan who sweats the details as much, or who is as positive with his players' failings, and knowing that it is that failure is an accepted part of growth and success.
Part of the process.
I think that's where he is absolutely the best in Japan.
I'll give you that. And I would like to ask Michael Westbay, or just hear his take on it, because he's a fan of the team. I really feel that to get people off his back, and the fans and the media as a whole, he's got to get to the Japan series again soon, just to satisfy or pacify some of these people. And he needs to win one to prove he's capable to the media. That would lift him into Bobby Ballantyne's status.
That's a hard challenge the way the leagues are now.
Well, getting there is part one, but I think if he were to win one, he'd be elevated. I think he gets there, he gets people off his back, because he got there one time. They darn near won the thing. They could have figured out.
I mean, this is a team that had no business being there. They had no business being there. They had no business being in that series. I mean, they had no business winning a game.
Yeah.
And they came really close to being in game seven. I mean, they came Dennis Sarfate away from being in game seven.
Yep. Yep. So I would like to see how that goes now. We will try to arrange an interview. I mean, I don't want to talk to the same teams. We've got to get some of these teams to get back to us, but I'm not going to call them out to this week. But there are teams that have not.
They're not engaging. They're not positively engaging with us.
Yeah.
And you know who you are.
And you know who you are. But it would be good, because I used to be able to go anytime and do one of those pregame powwow sit-ins with Ramikan. So maybe we'll just arrange an interview with him soon, because I'd like to hear his take on it too, because he's got to have thick skin and let this stuff roll off.
He's so positive. That's the thing. I mean, he takes that from his own thing. He's been through a lot of ups and downs, and he survived. He survived a crash with the Giants, you know, when nothing he did was good enough, and he was sort of like the reason they failed, you know. You know, he was like put on the line and said, this is the guy who the reason we're failing. I mean, and he was their most, you know, two-time MVP. And he's there. I mean, he's still a positive guy. And he's got, I don't want to make it sound like we're the Ramirez fan club, although probably to some extent we would if we could.
Oh, I root for him as the person. I'm not a fan of the team, but sure. I definitely root for him.
Sure. I mean, and again, we disagree on a lot of things, but I do love, you know, I love all the things he brings. I mean, okay, yeah, fine. He does stuff I couldn't possibly do. People ask me, well, why don't you manage? I go, are you kidding?
Are you kidding me, man? I don't need that headache with everybody criticizing the way you walk. No. All right, a couple of notes before we go. So the Junichi Tazawa is pitching for an independent league team this season. He's biding his time before he can join an NPV team. And basically, I saw a report this past week where because he shunned NPV and went out from the corporate league to the United States, let's put it that way, because I don't think he was guaranteed a major league roster spot at the time he left. But he
signed with an MLB team. Yeah.
And he signed with an MLB team. The NPB instituted a rule stating that any player who returns from overseas to play here in Japan in NPB has to sit out two seasons before being drafted again or being drafted by one of the 12 organizations. So I saw a report that they've called it, or I don't know if the media calls it that, but we've all dubbed it the Tazawa rule.
Yeah, it's pretty well known as the Tazawa rule because they made it for him. They made it after he announced he was going to sign. And then the owners got together and they said, let's have this rule. They gave it to him like a week before he signed and says, if you sign, there's no going back. You know, it was a threat.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, I'm gone.
And he stuck up his middle finger. Or no, that was a pen. Okay. That was a pen. And he signed anyway. So you have to sit out two seasons before you can rejoin, blah, blah, blah. Well, apparently the players union grew a spine sometime.
When we weren't looking.
And they've raised, I don't want to say they've not filed anything, right?
No.
Just they've raised the notion of fighting against this rule. So they grew sort of a spine, I suppose.
Yeah.
Let's not exaggerate.
Well, NPB's got all these little rules, you know, that aren't enforceable because essentially they're illegal. So they can't write them down and call them a rule. They're just agreements. That would be collusive behavior in America, but in Japan, it's okay. So
right.
And the owner said, we will think about it, which was kind of a shock. I know there are owners. I know there are teams that really hate the Tazawa rule because it's a waste of talent. And it's, you know, it wasn't going to stop Shohei Ohtani from going. It wasn't going to stop Yusei Kikuchi from going. They were all ready to go. And it wasn't the Tazawa rule. They didn't seem to care. There were other issues.
Yeah.
As it should be. There should be other. It should be. Not coercion.
Hashtag high.
Definitely should not be coercion. And one other note, geez, I don't even know what to call him, with the Yomiuri Giants infielder / outfielder.
Pinch runner. He's their pinch running specialist, basically.
He's their pinch running specialist. Okay, but he pitched for the Giants in an 11-0 loss to the Tigers on Thursday, and he threw a scoreless 2/3 of an inning. I actually thought it was an inning. I wasn't watching when he threw. I had checked out of that 11-0. So he threw 2/3 of an inning. He had a walk. He should have had a strikeout, and he thought it was a strikeout. And I don't know if Oshido was catching at the time, but they both thought it was a strikeout. But the umpire didn't think so. Maybe it was just spite. Maybe he's just being mean to a guy who shouldn't have been out there on the mound, in his opinion. But it was the first time for a Giants player to pitch in a game, a position player, since the two-league system started in 1950. So we don't know what happened before that, but it has been quite a while since they did that. And this doesn't happen that often in NPV. Now, you were looking up some numbers, and I don't know if you found them or not.
About how often?
Orestes Destrade.
Yeah, the last one was Akihito Urashi of played for Lotte and Oryx. And Bobby Valentine told me in 1995, well, he told me after that, we talked about it in years later before he managed again. And we talked about using this guy in all the positions, because he was his emergency catcher. He was an outfielder, but infielder, outfielder. And he wanted to use him, and he wanted to use him as a pitcher, but the team told Mr. Hiroka, Tatsuro Hiroka, his general manager, said, "No, we can't do it unless we announce it in advance."
What?
Because it's normally not done in Japan. You know, they made an excuse. It was one of those things, we don't want you embarrassing the team, because apparently for some people it's an embarrassment. So anyways, he never did it. But when Igarashi was traded to Oryx, Hall of Fame manager Akira Ogi did use him as a pitcher. And so he became only the second player in NPB history to play every single position. And if I think the game he played as a pitcher, he played in all nine positions.
Wow.
They had him in one position every inning or something. It was a stunt, but it was something. The other more recent time I saw was that Orestes Destrade on May 9th, 1995 at
the Lions.
With Cebu Lions. That was the year. He had, in fact, just came back from the 2-year stint with the Florida Marlins. And he didn't pitch it full in. He didn't get any outs. He didn't get any outs. He doesn't have an ERA, but I think he allowed a triple and a walk.
Well, but he allowed runs because they came home.
No, I think somebody came in and got out of the inning.
Good for him. All right. Well, yeah, you keep your zero. He doesn't have an ERA at all. They can't figure it out. All right. Well, hopefully we won't see that, but it is obviously very rare to see that happen in Japan.
Yes.
And the Dragons didn't even do it this year when they were losing 20 to, what was it, 5 or something to the Cardinals.
But it was special circumstances, as we said. There's been a lot of
– Right. They've got 9 games in 9 days.
Yeah, so for the Central League teams are at least four of the Central League teams have 9 games in a row, and a lot of teams are going to bullpen games. And this was a bullpen game for the Giants, and he ran through them, and they were losing 11-0, and it was the bottom of the 8th inning, and they had zero chance of winning. And Masuda had pitched in high school, and he threw 138 kilometers per hour, which is about 87.7 miles per hour. He pitched okay, but people had some really strong opinions about it. And then the most interesting was the former Giants manager, Tsune Horiuchi. I wrote a blog about it, something on my blog. Tsune Horiuchi, who said, "I turned off my TV. This was too disgusting." And this is the guy who's the worst manager in Giants history.
History, yeah.
Okay, and the other one, the surprise, is the old guy, the master of criticizing everything new and interesting.
Of snark, yeah.
Master of old boys snark, Isao Harimoto, another Hall of Fame hitter, the guy who loathed the idea of Shohei Ohtani batting, said that it was a great thing to do. It was delightful. It was something only Hara could do. Because
coronavirus is done.
Only Hara could do. He's a creative manager like the aforementioned Osamu Mihara. And I of course had to add that Akira Ogi was a disciple of Osamu Mihara. And I also have to think, when I saw that Darvish, Yu Darvish posted that, in a kind of a way to go old guy. Kind of tweet, and I said,
snark right back at you, Pops.
My snark was, I wonder if he would say the same if Alex Ramirez did it. And
nope.
and I have to say, I hope he would.
Nope. I
one
doubt
doesn't
it.
Know because there's a thing. Although Harimoto is an old guy, he's also
yo, don't get into too much.
Okay, I'm just saying, although Harimoto is an old guy, he's also an old Korean guy who's very proud of his Korean heritage and aware of, discrimination in Japan. So maybe.
Perhaps. Okay. All right. One last thing. You have a live viewing event coming up. When is it?
Yeah, that's correct. Our next jballallen.com members live viewing event will be on August 18th. That's a Tuesday, 6 p.m. Japan time. Game not decided, but we'll be streaming a game, so no problem. Everybody can see it. And that's 6 p.m. Japan time, 5 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So if you're a night owl, please join us.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so this week's question comes from Ollie via Twitter, and he says, I'm a big fan of the podcast. The question for this week's episode, I visited Japan last year, and I got to see games at Tokyo Dome, Meiji Jingu Stadium, and attended the Marines fan event at Zoza Marine Stadium. Oh. Why are the foul territories so large? So I went through and I ranked the stadiums by size of foul territory. And I think Sapporo Dome is number one with foul territory. Then I would say Chiba, Zozo Marine Stadium, Koshien, and Kyocera Dome in that order. And then maybe Fukuoka, maybe the least of those dome stadiums. Yeah.
Tokyo Dome and then, is smaller, yeah.
And then for average foul territory, I've got Nagoya Dome, Tokyo Dome, Seibu, MetLife Dome, and then the place I've never been to, I think you've been to Hiroshima's new...
I think they're fairly... it's fairly small.
Average.
Small.
Yeah, average. Mazda. Except down the lines, it's really narrow. But yeah. For those pop fly areas or the pop areas around home plate and everything, it's just as much space there as there is at the other places. But yeah, down the lines, not so much. And then not much foul territory, Jingu, Yokohama, Sendai... And that's about it.
Sendai's, I think, probably the smallest, I think.
Yeah, because it is a small, quaint stadium.
And they built it, you know, when they, unlike the other ones, when they put in field, most of the field seats they added were sort of copies of what they did in Sendai from the original plan.
Okay. Okay. So I know Sapporo Dome, for one of the reasons why it has so much foul ground is because it was a multi-purpose dome in its design when it went up. Mm-hmm. And the seats, actually, I think it's the infield seats on either side of the foul lines can be moved, and the stadium can be reconfigured to host soccer, obviously baseball, and I think American football sure. games can be played.
Rugby as well. Yeah.
And rugby. So, yeah, I don't know. What they were thinking at the other places like in Chiba, but I would imagine in Chiba they didn't worry about it so much because with all the wind that's there at that stadium, they figured a bunch of pop flies were going to fall anyway, so it wasn't such a bad thing. But I thought about places like Yokohama Stadium and that it might be average in the foul territory, but that might help the pitchers a little bit just to average things out because that stadium helps the hitters. It's so hitter friendly. The places with artificial turf like that and Jingu don't have as much foul territory, perhaps maybe to, I don't know.
Less foul territory helps the hitters. So.
Well, it's going to help the hitters, but I know that, but the pitchers have to deal with the artificial turf being so fast, right? Especially at Yokohama.
True.
So you fall on the ground, scoot a lot faster through the infield. So you would think there'd be more foul territory in those places.
Yeah. You wonder what more is. I mean, if balance was the goal, I don't know. I don't know if there ever is a goal. I mean, Jingu's old stadium that's been remodeled about probably a half dozen times. Now because it's going to be gone in a few years.
Yeah, that's true too. Well, if they ever have an Olympics, haha.
Yeah.
But the one thing to note is I don't know whose idea it was to have a lot of foul ground because it's just weird that there is a lot of foul ground at places like Koshien for no reason. And you would think
there is a reason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Koshien was designed as a multi-purpose stadium.
As well, okay.
Back in, the reason for those huge, the reason for the huge power alleys to left and center, which are, you know, it's almost as deep. In fact, it's deeper to left and right than it is to center, is so they could put a rugby pitch in there.
Gotcha.
When they built it in like 1919.
Oh, I said 1890, but what's the difference?
Yeah. What's the difference?
Just a few years. So, but here's the thing is, and it happened with the gymnasiums here in Japan. I don't know. Somebody designed a gym back in the day, and then it seems like they passed around the blueprints and made every other gym just the same way where they could.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just copycatting. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest. I don't think people put a lot of thought into it. There does seem to be more foul ground in some parks, but like we said, some of them are multi-purpose stadiums. Mm-hmm. The ones that are strictly for baseball seem to be very similar.
And yeah, I think we see that. We do see that.
The blueprints just seem to be one size fits all for everybody.
Small regional parks, you know, the local parks where they'll play high school and corporate league games. You know,
those are a little different. Yeah.
Well, they are some of them, but I would think if you could go to a dozen of them and not know which stadium you're in because they're except for the outside scenery.
Yeah, only the fencing is a different color.
Sure. And in the soccer stadiums, almost all of them have running tracks because they have to sell multi-purpose stadiums, you know, athletic tracks. But a few of them that don't have it are just marvelous. So anyway, as time goes on and things mature, then we'll get more specialty built stadiums where the atmosphere is better.
One can only hope.
Yeah, I'll just say I love Mazda Stadium. I mean, I just love it. It's just the views are great. It's like I haven't been to the Rock Tent since they put in the Ferris wheel and the merry-go-round, but yeah, I bet it's dynamite.
I've seen it. Well, we will talk about that another time. I don't do Ferris wheels. But anyway, wow. Thank you. Thank you very much for listening in this time of sports coming back. Now you actually have choices, so we appreciate you listening to us. Anyone who wants to send a question, either by email or via email, send a MP3, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast or let us know what you're thinking on Facebook, on the Facebook page. Send us a question, a comment, criticism, a request, anything you want. We'll get back to you. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you looking at the games at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter @JBWPodcast and @JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.